The Sound Fountain presents the second of three programs looking at the concept of home. Can You Go Home Again? Produced and presented by Dheera Sujan.
My name is Fuad Hussain. I have been in Holland since 1975. My age is 50 years. And I came from Iraqi Kurdistan.
The Exile.
My name is Tsering Chamba. I'm from Tibet. I come from southwest of Tibet. I was 4.5 years old when my parents left Tibet. And I grew up in India. I've been living in Holland since 1982.
The Refugee.
My name is Sunil Ramdas. I am from Suriname. And I came to Holland in my 20s to study. And the aim was to study here for about 6-7 years and going back to help to build your country. But I never left.
The Immigrant.
I'm Hanifa Dean. I often describe myself as a Kalgoorlie Paki, but I never let anyone else call me that. I guess you could call me a third generation Australian.
The Third Generation. Can you go home again?
After 17 years, I have been back to part of my country. I haven't been back to my town and to Baghdad because it's not allowed to go there. If I will be there, they will arrest me. I've been back to part of the country which is under the control of the Kurdish authorities. And there I have seen many people, but I have been back so after 17 or 18 years actually. And it was sad situation to be back because I went back to the places when I was in the resistance. I wanted to see the villages where I slept, but they were all destroyed by Iraqi government. It was very sad to see that, but at the same time, for me, it was very nice to see some friends whom I left 25 years ago or 20 years ago. I have seen them. Some of them, they became old. Also because of the war, they have been changed.
In 1995, when the United Nations had organized a women conference in Beijing, the Chinese embassy in The Hague refused to give me visa, even I had a Dutch passport. I had all the documents required for the visa from the UN to attend the conference. I was not allowed to go. And after that, I'm a little bit hesitant to even apply for a visa. I don't want to go in there and get arrested because we have experienced such cases, many cases, that young Tibetans go back to Tibet without any basis. They are charged with espionage. And to give an example, young Tibetan Ngawang Chimbul, a Tibetan musician, what he was doing was he was just collecting data on traditional Tibetan music, and he was studying at the Vermont University College in the United States, Fulbright scholar. And he was arrested, and he was charged with espionage. And I think his sentence is 18 years. So I'm a little bit hesitant to go in there and sit in Chinese jail. I prefer sit outside and do what I can.
I was studying here in Holland, and I got into a kind of student kind of depression of losing touch with reality. And one of my teachers said, well, maybe you should go to reality. I said, what do you mean, going back to Suriname? He said, no, even worse, try India. I said, I don't know anyone in India. What will I do there? I mean, where will I stay? I don't have money to pay for huge hotels and so on. I said, no, well, just try it. So I booked a ticket and I had some money, about 600 guilders for 2 months. And I had no addresses. And I didn't know how the taxi worked. I didn't know how many rupees I would get for a guilder. I was totally unprepared. But I knew the language. And I maybe looked like them. And that helped. I mean, that was kind of amazing experience, becoming a majority after 9 years of flight. It was an extremely beautiful experience. In Suriname, we were not a minority, but living amongst the blacks and the Chinese and the Japanese and so on. In Holland, you were a minority, definitely. And all the other people looked different from yourself and from your family. And there they were, a whole billion of them, looking like you, not even noticing you. The only way I could reveal that I wasn't an Indian was through the jeans I wore. So I got rid of them immediately. And I became an Indian, which was a marvelous experience for the first 3 days. And after that, you really realize how un-Indian you are.
For me, it's not so much that I long for Tibet the way it was in the sense, the beautiful buildings, the beautiful monasteries. But for me, I think it's something the people, Tibetan people who live there, that on daily basis, that they do not have that freedom.
When I go back to Pakistan, I always feel excited because there are familiar faces and I'm not visibly different. It's not until I open my mouth that my accent gives me away, and the fact that I can't speak the language gives me away too. But it's so relaxing not having to explain who you are and where you come from. And yes, you do have a beautiful name and you go on explaining the name. And there comes a time in your life when you start to get resentful of it. You don't take it as a compliment that people are interested in your exotic appearance. You just think, why don't you bugger off? You're boring me with this. I answer that question every day of my life. Go away, develop, broaden your horizons.
It was a mixed feeling when I went back. Many places, they have been destroyed. And most of what I have seen was the mentality has been changed because of the war. People has been in the war for many years, 8 years war against Iran, many years wars against Kurds, and later the war in Kuwait. So I had the feeling that war has changed the psychology of the people, but also their culture. In the past, when I was there, solidarity was a very important aspect among the people. People that were ready to offer themselves for their ideas. But this time I have met people and they are more materialistic than idealistic.
I really have not really tried very hard to go back to Tibet. I also have not so much urge to go to even to India or to Tibetan community to feel Tibetan and to do what I can do as a Tibetan. Because I think I have a very clear goal that I set up for myself, and that has something to do with the Tibet. So when I get up in the morning till I go to bed, for me, it's that doing something with Tibet, so constantly that you are involved, day in, day out. There's not really much need, the urge to go really back to Tibetan society, to feel Tibetan. It hasn't bothered me a lot because all the time I have been active doing something for Tibet. So Tibet is so close to me that because I have adopted it as part of my goal.
In India, I really noticed how Western I am. I realized that I speak their language and I look like them. And may I add, even thank God I wasn't like them. They were strangers to me, completely strangers, very much stranger than the Dutch in Holland.
I am asking myself all the time, is it possible when the country will be liberated, is it possible for me to live there or not? But the question is not you can live there or not. The question is, will you be happy there if you will go back? Because of the fact that I am now divided between two homes, my ideal picture about future is that to have both. It seems I am in love with two countries, so I would like to have both.
There's a great difference between Indians in Suriname, the West Indians, and Indians in India. The first and maybe the most important is that the Indians in Suriname, they learned to be racist. They had to develop that attitude to stick together. So all others were dangerous and were lower or were different or were strange, and we didn't want to have nothing to do with them. That's the Indian racism, which is very common to the Caribbean. So every other Indian would be someone you would trust. In India, I noticed that they were like nearly normal people. They hated each other, they robbed each other, they treated each other like humans should. And the idea of sticking together or having something in common wasn't there at all. And the language which I thought I spoke, which I learned from cinema, this was not the... I mean, people didn't talk like Rajesh Khanna on the streets. I mean, they spoke a language which I remotely understood, but, I mean, it wasn't that beautiful Hindi, and they didn't start singing after a while. And they were not those light-colored kind of fat people I always saw on the screens. They were skinny, they were dark, they were dirty, they were poor, and they were not even friendly. Haseena zulfon wale jaane jahan dhoondti hai kaafir aankhein kiska nishaan oh haseena zulfon wale jaane jahan dhoondti hai kaafir aankhein kiska nishaan mehfil mehfil ae shama firte ho kahan mehfil.
When I went back, being with people, you know, friends, you know, same language, same culture, going back to your own roots, you feel safe. I mean, I don't know why, but I felt that I'm among my own people once again. Although everybody had gone there, everybody was saying that perhaps Saddam is going once again to attack, but I was among my friends once again. Besides that, I was in the mountains, and mountains for me was always symbol of being safe. Mountains protected us always, and I miss mountains here. So being with your own people, being with your with people who speak the same language, eating with them, sleeping in the same places, and I was very happy, I must say. And of course, brought me back to the old day when I was young and in the mountain, in the resistance. I mean, the old idea with all its romantic aspects came back to me. Is it true or not? Was it romantic or not? That's different. But in my mind, it was romantic. So all came back, and I felt young once again.
I certainly have never looked at Pakistan through tinted spectacles. I have never tended to romanticize about wanting to go back to my roots. I go back to Pakistan, I enjoy it very much, and I am very happy to come back to Australia because Australia allows me certain freedoms that I would have to negotiate very carefully in Pakistan, and I'm not prepared to do that. So I have no illusions about many of the things that I take for granted in Australia. Access to resources, freedom to move around, economic independence.
Identity.
Of course I was appalled for all the good reasons. The poverty, I never realized what poverty looked like until I went to India. I mean, it was the first experience with the drama of the third world. And what I thought was un-Indian. Imagine someone thinking of India that looked like India shows itself in cinema, and then going to see reality. The difference is huge. So that culture shock, since then I went to India every 2 years, and I'm very accustomed to India. I know the smells, and I know how the taxi works, and I know where to go, and I know how to treat people and so on. In the beginning, I felt very un-Indian when I came there, and it took me about 3-4 months before I could adapt a little. And nowadays, it takes me about 4 hours. And then I'm an Indian again. And I stop being Indian when I leave.
The thing that bothered me as a child was some of the food taboos. I had an incredible curiosity about pork. What did it taste like? What did those little red Frankfurters taste like? I remember always going to kids' birthday parties, and I would always have to eat the soggy tomato sandwiches because there were those little meat pies I couldn't have. They weren't halal. So it's strange that that taboo has still remained with me. I no longer eat halal meat, but I won't touch pork. But it shows that some things get to you when you're very, very young, and I think the food taboo was one of them. I mean, we used to be punished if we even dared to mouth the word P-I-G at one another as kids. You know, you could have your mouth washed out with soap. I mean, that sort of does develop a Pavlovian response of some kind.
When I go to Suriname, I am not able to talk to the intellectuals that were there, because before I start saying anything, before I even have an opinion, they would say, well, we are not waiting for your opinion. You left. And we stayed. And we are the only ones who may have opinions about what is going on. You are there, so keep your opinions for yourself. And I really hate that idea. I become angry completely and bitter and so on. But I do that because I know that there is some truth in it. Of course, I don't have the right to have opinions on Suriname. But I also detest the martyrdom of those people who say, well, we remained here. We had a choice, but we stayed. And first place, I think that they didn't have a choice. They made the wrong decisions and they are regretting it. And they have to make something out of it.
It is important that I had involuntarily left Tibet. My route still goes back to Tibet. And of course, again, in our case, there's this political situation, the way you are forced to come out of Tibet. That certainly plays a role where you really want to be identified as a Tibetan and that your home is in Tibet. Yes, I do feel at home now in Holland, but at the same time, when I really feel as though Tibet is still my home, I think even though I have adopted Dutch nationality, but at the same time, I cannot feel as a Dutch. I cannot feel as a Dutch. And I think Tibetans, the way we feel about our culture, in a sense, is people are deeply rooted with their Buddhism. And I know that the Tibetans living all over the world, many of them adopted the nationality of that particular country, yet they remain Tibetan. And they do express that through different ways in their daily lives, how they feel that they have the responsibility of preserving their culture, which is not possible in Tibet.
Fuad Hussein, journalist.
One of the important aspects why I'm involved in this society and I have a great link with this society is that I have been married and I have two children. And I've got a Dutch wife and my children, they were born here. And of course, they grown up here. One of them is 11 years old. So that means part of the roots actually is going to grow up here. I have my roots somewhere else, but it seems that part of the root has been transferred to another country.
Anil Ramdas, commentator.
Indians don't have the wish to go back at all. They are very nostalgic and they enjoy India through cinema, especially cinema and the songs. But they will never think of going back to settle down there. And you know why? I think I know why. I think that Indians, when they leave their country, never realize that they are leaving Bharat. They think it's only becoming larger and larger and larger. Wherever they go, India goes. So India is kind of spreading. When they came to Suriname, Suriname was just another province of India. They even brought seeds of rice and mangoes and so on. They even brought earth, Indian earth. So nowadays we have in Suriname the weeds from India in Suriname. So when I went to India for the first time, I already had that attitude that I was not going home or whatever. But, you know, the basic idea was I never left India. So you never go back. You can only go back to a place you left.
Hanifa Dean, writer.
People sometimes ask me, why do you write about women outside Australia? Why do you write about Bangladeshi women and Pakistani women? And you seem to go backwards and forwards to Bangladesh, which isn't even your own ancestral homeland. Why do you do this? To me, that is my mainstream. I feel comfortable there. I feel that is a mainstream for me, and that those stories, that fiction or non-fiction, is very important. I cannot get excited about writing about Australia because the Australia that other people experience is very foreign to me. So it always has to be something that goes back to the subcontinent to hold my interest as a writer. I have to be passionate about what I write, and I can get passionate about things that are happening often outside Australia.
Chering Champa, activist.
I want to do something for Tibet. So every hour I'm doing something, there's my longing, because the way I feel about Tibet, the way I feel about my work is more subjective, more emotional than anybody else. Because I think I'm emotionally involved with my people, I'm emotionally involved with the Tibet. I think if I'm not subjective, if I'm not emotional about Tibet, what's happening there, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing now.
Can you go home again?
my political loyalties has been changed. When I came here in 1975, I was thinking that everybody must know who the Kurds are. And I was shocked when I met people, they didn't know anything about Kurds. At that time, they didn't know anything about Iraq even. And well, as far as my political ideas, I was very loyal. But, of course, during this long time, it became difficult for me to be part of the group. Besides that, it became difficult for me to let others to think for me. It became difficult for me to let others to decide for me. And when I began to raise these questions, I found my way difficult to be part of the group. And not only that, I was criticizing everything openly, and in such a political culture, it's not allowed. So it became difficult for me to deal with my own old ideas, with my own old political culture, and that's why I left it. And I think age plays also a big role. You see, I was young at that time, and I thought I can change not only my country, the whole world. And because of the age, because of the experience, then, you know, you reach a conclusion thinking that you can change everything. You can change even yourself sometimes. So you must accept many things.
Nostalgia.
The Suriname of my youth is not there anymore. The India of my youth is not there. India changes so dramatically. I mean, India is a very good example. You just go to India 2 years later and it's completely different. When I first came to India, people wanted to buy the jeans I wore. When I came there a few years later, I opened my suitcase for the customs and they looked at my computer, which I had with me, my laptop, and they said, oh, what an old model. This is how quickly things change there. So nostalgia can only work when you use it in a positive sense, that you realize that it's not there, it's not a time went by, but it is an inspiration with which you can produce something new.
What makes home, home?
Memories make home, home. You must have a bank of memories or your life will be very stunted. And I think that's very difficult for people who immigrate from one country to another. You are continually bathed in nostalgia, and nostalgia sometimes prevents you from moving forward, prevents you from grasping the new society. So you become very self-sacrificing. You've moved here, you've left your important memories behind you, but you've done it for your children, and you always tell them that too.
I don't believe in nationalism, because if you live in the West as a minority, you understand that everything that has to do with nationalism is potentially dangerous, because it would always exclude me. It will never include me. It will never say, well, okay, because you have your Dutch passport and you speak Dutch and you work in Holland and you vote on the elections and you pay your taxes, you are Dutch like we are. Holland is not that kind of country. Holland is not America, where there is an American way of life, and people would say anything to a black man, but never that he is not an American. So when you live in Holland, you start realizing that nationalism can be something potentially racist, can be something bad. I mean, I never saw the concept nationalism used in a good sense. So I don't like the idea of nationalism, but I even more detest the idea of long-distance nationalism, because it is the bad sense of nostalgia we are talking about. When a Punjabi living in Canada gives money to terrorists in the Punjab who kill people, he does that because he thinks that this is a good way of responding towards his nostalgia. But when you realize that when you live in Canada, the Punjab you left is not there anymore, you wouldn't do that, would you?
In my situation, actually, I have got relationship with Dutch society outside my home. Dutch culture became part of my life because of the fact that I have been married to a Dutch wife, and my children, they are going to Dutch school. Coming back, they speak Dutch. So that means my culture behavior or social behavior has been changed. That's true. I think differently. I deal with problems differently than when I came. I compare my situation now when I see my friends who stayed at home and in my country. When I see them, when I came here, I was thinking about the group. I was thinking about collective, I was thinking about you can't talk about mistakes in my culture. It is not good to show your weakness. That's not allowed. But nowadays, it is easier for me to talk about my weakness, even when some people are sitting there and they are not my friends. It is normal. I became more individualist than before.
What I really like, for instance, of nostalgia is like Talwin Singh, a famous musician in England. He is from the Punjab, and he is nostalgic all the time. But what he does with his tabla is something they don't do in India. He has really changed his nostalgic feelings and produced something completely new, a new kind of culture, a new kind of beat, a new kind of sound, a new kind of nostalgia. And he really uses it to produce something else. I detest the nostalgia where people long for something else in a passive sense and, you know, thinking that it was better then, and it was safer, it was lovelier. It was not in the first place. And the second place, well, go back then and shut up. I mean, it's really boring listening to people saying that Suriname was such a great country to live in. They have to admit that it was a great country to live in when I was 15 years old and my parents were earning the money and I didn't have to work. And I didn't have mortgages. And I didn't have to pay the bills. That was beautiful. So then tell me that you are really nostalgic for your youth or childhood. That's something else. But don't call it Suriname.
Because of the fact that I have been in the West, because of the fact that I have been for so long far away from my country, so my country became also a kind of study field for me. So when you are studying a subject, you are watching everything. It is different to be a player than a watcher. In the past, I was a player, and I was an active player, and now I am an active watcher. So that is the difference, and that's why now I see it differently.
Looking for your youth is one of the basic elements in human life. The first 10, 15, 16 years of your life are so important because those are the years where you really experience everything for the first time. After that, it repeats itself. That's such an amazing experience that you will always long for youth, for your youth. And actually, we do that all the time. We keep on longing for our youth. We keep on longing for the moment when we were really surprised, when we really saw something for the first time, when we really saw cinema for the first time, when we really heard music for the first time, when we really saw hatred for the first time, or found love for the first time. And when we get old, you kind of romanticize that idea again of youth. And I can imagine that people really want to go back to their youths.
Can You Go Home Again? The second of three Sound Fountain programs looking at the concept of home, produced and presented by Thiro Sujan. Sound engineer Marcel Corfage. Thanks go to Chering Champa, Hanifa Deen, Fuad Hussein, and Anil Ramdas. Titles read by Jackie Spears. This has been a Radio Netherlands presentation.